Vayera Elav Adonai Be'elone Mamre Vehu Yoshev Pesach Ohel Kechom Hayom. Hashem appeared to him in the plains of Mamre while he was sitting at the entrance of the tent in the heat of the day. OU Israel presents...
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky. And this show is for Parshat Vayera, recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 13th day of Mar Cheshvan, 5775, corresponding to the 6th of November. Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir Hama'alot Mima'amakim Karaticha Adonai. Adonai Shema V'Koli, Tihyena Oznecha Kashuvot, L'Kol Tachanunai. Im Avonot Tishmor Yoh Adonai, Mia Amod, Ki Imacha Hasalicha L'Ma'an Tivare. Ki Viti Adonai Kivata Nafshi, V'Lidvaro Hochalti. Nafshi L'Adonai, Mi Shomerim L'Boker, Shomerim L'Boker. Yachel Yisrael El Adonai Ki Im Adonai HaChesed V'Harbe Imo Fidut V'Hu Yifde Et Yisrael Mikol Avonotav Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael Hanetunim Batzara V'Ashivya Ha'omedim Bein Bayam Uvein Bayabasha Hamakom Yerachem Aleihem V'Yotzieim Mitzara Lirvacha U'Miafela La'ora U'Mishibud L'Geula Hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. Let's get right down to business and start with that first verse of Parshat Vayera that I read. Vayera elav Hashem, God appeared to him. Unusual that it uses, that the Torah uses a pronoun, but pronouns assume an antecedent. The antecedent, of course, is Avraham Avinu, who, as we last saw in the end of Parshat Lech Lecha, had undergone the difficult procedure of circumcision at the advanced age of 99 years. So our sages teach us an unwritten kind of concept that God's purpose of appearing to Avraham was to visit the sick. Bikur Cholim. Bikur Cholim is a big mitzvah. It's a big act of chesed, gemilut chasadim. Nobody points to the beginning of Parshat Vayera and says this is the source of Bikur Cholim, but it is taken as the inspiration for Bikur Cholim to be among the major examples of acts of kindness. The commentaries further support the idea that God had a purpose other than speaking to Avraham, since we don't have any record of anything being said. So we assume, or the commentaries assume, that God had a different purpose rather than informing Avraham of something. And that's part of what feeds into the concept of Bikur Cholim. Now, we could take it a step further, and again, this is using commentaries and Midrashim, not just the wording in the text. Avraham was sitting at the entrance, the opening of his tent, Kechom Hayom, in the heat of the day. In the heat of the day, Rashi and other commentaries say that God made the day exceptionally hot. The expression that's used is God removed the sun from its filtering envelope, a raw-er, more raw version of the sun, a blistering heat which discouraged travelers, and therefore Avraham would be able to lie back, rest, sip a cool lemonade, and not, as he was wont to do, be busy with greeting travelers and visitors. However, say our sources, Avraham was a little too fidgety with that. He liked the action. He didn't want to have an easygoing day, even though he was ailing from his recent circumcision. And therefore, God adjusted his plan and brought three angels in the guise of human beings to Avraham so that Avraham would get excited, which he did, to the point where he actually says to God, please wait while I go greet these guys. That's at least one opinion, a very strong opinion. And he was in his element, and for him that was recuperative. I don't remember where I saw it the first time, but I've been using this as an example of needing to know how a person will react when you do certain things for that person. Picture someone sick in the hospital and a few of his friends come to visit. I would say many people enjoy the fussing. Can I fluff up your pillow? Can I get you something to drink? You want me to ask the nurse something? Want me to ask the doctor something? I'll go down to the cafe and get you something to eat. I'll open the Venetian blinds. I'll close the Venetian blinds. Are you warm enough? Are you cool enough? That kind of fussing works with some people. I would say many people. But then there are those who are very off-put by that kind of fussing. And the best thing you could do is just sit there and talk baseball or talk Divrei Torah, which I should have said first, and not fuss because you know that the person doesn't appreciate fussing. And I believe that we can say that this is a lesson we take from God himself. God makes the day exceedingly hot so that no visitors will bother Avraham. Avraham needs visitors because that's what he does, and he doesn't want a day resting in the shade. So God changes his plan and brings visitors. Now, you could also add that there are times in the Bible that record angels visiting where it was obvious that they were angels. And here, when they are referred to as anashim, people, we get the feeling that rather than God having the angels appear to Abraham in some usual celestial way, he purposely brought them as people, as wayfarers, so that Avraham would have something to do, to greet the people, which he does. And we learn a lot of things from him. We learn the kind of hospitality that became the hallmark of Jewish people throughout the world. We are an exceedingly hospitable people. Doesn't mean that there aren't individuals that are exceptions to the rule, but as a rule, we are amazingly hospitable. And the meal that the Torah describes, the food that the Torah describes Avraham preparing for the angels, is truly a sumptuous kind of meal. Commentaries say it was the top delicacy, which interestingly is tongue, beef tongue in mustard sauce. I don't know where Rashi gets that from, possibly a Medrash. I don't know why the Medrash would say such a thing. You know, what difference does it make what the menu was? But the commentaries praise Avraham for even outdoing the future Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, in a sumptuous banquet that he threw in honor of the building of the Beit HaMikdash, the Holy Temple. And per capita, this was even greater feast, an even greater feast. And then Avraham escorts his visitors out, which is another aspect of Hachnasat Orchim. And we already have now two significant examples of Gemilut Chasadim. Bikur Cholim is one, Hachnasat Orchim is another. And these are some of the things we learn from our patriarchs and matriarchs, even if the mitzvah count is on the low side, which is an exaggeration, or an understatement, I should say, putting it mildly, because the entire book of Bereshit, which is the largest of the five books of the Chumash, of the Torah, has the fewest mitzvot by far, a total of three. We have already had two of them, Pru Urevu, be fruitful and multiply, and Brit Milah, circumcision. The one to come will be in Parshat Vayishlach, and that is the first prohibition, that of eating the Gid HaNasheh, which we'll talk about when we get there. Another lesson within the framework of Hachnasat Orchim, hospitality, that we learn from Avraham, is his involvement not only of his wife Sarah, but of his son Yishmael as well, so that even if Avraham could have done things on his own, it's very important for a person to involve the family. And this is a hallmark of Judaism also. It's not, I do my mitzvot, and my children will do it on their own. But the involvement of one's children in greeting people, in helping people, in building a sukkah, and in many, many other aspects of Jewish life and mitzvah. On another note, I don't know who else can lay claim to the term Torah tidbits. I believe, independently, that I coined it back in 1970-ish, where it meant something different than it does today. The first time I used the term, it was for a short Devar Torah, or a short halachic explanation, in the context of NCSY Shabbatonim and conventions in the States. I had attended a few at the time, and I was a little off-put by long 20-minute intricate Divrei Torah that some of the advisors were delivering, which I felt was going right over the heads of the kids. And I tried to introduce short 60-second, 90-second little pieces of Divrei Torah and Devar Halacha. And I said, Torah tidbit. That was a number of years, and then it went into mothballs, I guess. And it wasn't until 1990, maybe 89, that I started a single page of a Devar Torah headed by a headline stating Torah tidbits, was not distributed any place. It was put on, we had back at 10 Strauss, our first location, two slanted shelves where we used to put flyers announcing programs at the center. And I added to that a Torah tidbit. And that lasted for a while. And then there was another incarnation when David Katz, now at MMY, but then was head of our Nitzotz program, was bringing a group of students down to Gush Katif. Tells you how long ago this was. Down to Gush Katif for a learning and working experience in the beginning of Nisan. And the kids, I think, were picking tomatoes in a couple of hours in the mornings, and they had a box lunch, and David had asked me to prepare a Dvar Torah on Pesach or the Haggadah to go along with it. So I named it Torah Tidbits to Go, and it was a sheet of paper folded twice, a little fourfold, and it had a Dvar Torah mostly from the Haggadah, something that they would be able to read and then share at their Seder tables. And then, in June of 1992, then director of the center, Shai Solomon, asked me to print up a schedule of activities of the center, shiurim and programs, for distribution in shuls with English-speaking population of people who didn't necessarily read the Jerusalem Post, because until then we had been advertising our programs in the Jerusalem Post. I've told the story before, but I'm getting to a certain point. The idea did not sit well with me to distribute on Shabbat a list of weekday activities, even though they were Torah-oriented activities. So I came up with the idea of putting a Dvar Torah on one side and the schedule of activities on the other side of a piece of paper. I would be comfortable with that, and that was the first of the current incarnation of Torah Tidbits. So that goes back 22 and a half years, almost, and that's what we have today in great increase in size and distribution. And I mean, that first Shabbat, it was distributed 30 copies to two different shuls, the Beit Yaakov shul in Ramat Eshkol and Shai Solomon's father's shul in Neiot, and that was it. And then it just took off with a life of its own. But in the previous incarnation, the one where it was just a Dvar Torah, single side of a piece of paper under the heading Torah Tidbits, the very, very first one of that was for Parshat Vayera, which is why I just gave you this long-winded introduction. And the topic was, the specific Dvar Torah, was a Dvar Torah that I had heard previously, years before, from Dr. Paul Slater, when I lived in Arze Habira, as he did, probably still does. And there was a Malava Malka in his home, he and Shifra, and this was the Dvar Torah that he gave, and it struck me, and it stuck in my mind. I found out later that he got it from Ma'ayana Shel Torah, Wellsprings of Torah, and the Wellsprings of Torah was quoting the Chidushei Harim. So it's hard to know who to give credit for, because I heard it from Paul, and he got it from Ma'ayana Shel Torah, and he got it from Chidushei Harim. I titled it, and I wrote it this week in this week's Torah Tidbits, the hard print, Angel Arithmetic. It's the following question. God sends three angels to visit Avraham, and Rashi tells us the reason three angels went is because they were more than one task to accomplish, and Ein Malach Achad Oseh Shtei Shluchiyot. One angel does not do two tasks at the same time. I guess they never took the seminar on multitasking. So Rashi delineates the tasks. One was to heal Avraham, third day of his circumcision. Another was to announce to Avraham the glad tidings that Sarah will become pregnant. and give birth to a son who they shall call Yitzchak. And the third was to continue on to Sodom to destroy those cities. Three tasks, three angels. But wait. After the three angels visit Abraham, and one angel succeeded in healing Abraham, and a second angel did make the announcement of the birth of Yitzchak, the third angel continues on to Sodom with one of the other two. I think the one that announced the birth of Yitzchak, but I don't remember exactly. Could be the other. Two angels now go to visit Lot, because there are still two tasks to be accomplished: the destruction of Sodom and the saving of Lot. So the Chidushi Harim raises the question: either send two angels to Avraham to heal Avraham, to announce the birth of Yitzchak. Their jobs are finished. Send the two of them on to Sodom, one to save Lot and one to destroy the city. Or you could argue against that a destroying angel is of a particular type that does not fit into the other tasks well. Okay, so if there are four tasks, send four angels, because you actually have four tasks. Why just three? And he answers as follows: to heal Avraham, to announce the birth of Yitzchak, and to destroy Sodom were the original planned tasks for these three angels. Whether Lot was to be saved or not was a question mark. Now, Lot was hospitable, which he learned from Avraham. He was also Avraham's nephew, if that gives him any credit. But he was not a great person. There were problems there, and it could have been that he was to be destroyed as well. When Avraham heard the plan to destroy Sodom, he argued with God, but he lost his argument. So what ultimately gave Lot enough merit to be saved? Hold that thought and hold that question, because I just recorded about 4.5 minutes over time, which will be at the beginning of the next half. In the meantime, keep that question in mind, mull it over, and we'll get to it shortly. So stay tuned for more Torah Tidbits audio. You are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Vayera. As I said at the very end of the first half, I over-recorded this time more than 4.5 minutes on that Devar Torah, which I sort of like, and therefore I expounded on, and I hope you like it also. It's not the most earth-shattering of Devar Torah, but it's cute, for lack of a better word. Anyway, here's the answer to the question that the Chidushi Harim gives to what merited Lot to be saved. According to our sources, not only his nephewship from Avraham, but that he was the progenitor of Ruth Hamoaviah, Ruth, mother of royalty, King David, King Solomon, the entire Davidic line, all came from Lot and one of his daughters in the aftermath of the destruction of Sodom. So first you say, well, wait a minute, Ruth wasn't born yet. Why would that be credited to Lot? The answer is simply put that with human beings who are locked into a past, present, future time continuum, then I could only give you credit for that which has already happened. But in God's realm, he's able to give Lot the merit that he needed to be saved, both by his uncle Avraham and his great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter, Ruth Hamoaviah. And now it gets a little cute. Ruth, as a Moabite, was not automatically going to be acceptable to marry into the Jewish people, because the Torah says, Lo yavo Amoni u'Moavi b'kahal Hashem. An Ammonite and a Moabite, the two children produced from Lot and his daughters, are not allowed to marry into the Jewish people. Why? Because they were not hospitable when it came to Bnei Israel asking for permission to go through their territory, and they did not offer water and bread, and they hired Bilam to curse the people. Okay. On the basis of who affronted the Jewish people and God by not allowing, by not being hospitable to Israel, the answer is, the question is, was it the entire Moabite people, or was it only the male Moabites? And, according to the Chidushei Horim, Sarah Imenu, who is not just our matriarch, but she, like Avraham, who was Av Hamon Goyim, she was the Ima of many, many nations. All kind of Midrashim attached to that. And she acted modestly when the angels asked Avraham, where is your wife Sarah? And the answer was, she's in the tent. In other words, she does not come out to stand in front of guests. Only when I bring them into the tent, then she's there. But she does not step forward, because women are quieter and more modest. I hope this is not politically incorrect to talk like this. When Sarah Imenu, says the Chidushei Horim, said, when it was said of Sarah that she was back in the tent, it allowed a future Beit Din, a future court, to apply a rule to the Torah that analyzed Lo Yavo Moavi, that there is a ban against a male Moabite, Velo Moaviah, and not a female. Because the Torah gives the reason, Al Asher Lo Kidmu Etchem Balechem Uvamayim, and Sarah being not the one that's up front to offer water and bread, which was Avraham's task, established the modesty of all women for the future, and that allowed Ruth to be accepted to marry Boaz. And that gave Lot his merit. So no angel was sent in the first place to visit Avraham and then continue on to Sodom, because the saving of Lot was still a question mark. That question mark evaporated with, where is Sarah? She's in the tent. And therefore, a Sanhedrin of the future would allow Ruth to marry Boaz and become the progenitors of the Davidic dynasty till Melech HaMashiach. So that was the explanation as to why there are only three angels sent. So he continues by saying that sometimes a person doesn't merit an angel to be sent to save him, but he can pick up merit on the way, which in this case Lot did. They tell a story, he tells a story in Mayona Shel Torah, which is not part of the Dvar Torah. I think about Rav Shlomo Kluger, one of the great Rabbonim of Europe in previous generation, not the immediate previous, but one of the past, where he became the Rav of a certain town. In that town, they had a practice that if a person, a man, was on his deathbed and his wife had just given birth to a baby, they would wait to circumcise the child after the father passed away, since it was imminent, and therefore they would be thereby they would be able to name the child for the father. When he heard this, he said, absolutely not. 8 days old, circumcise. And they did, because he was the new Rav and they hired him. And as not as a result, but after the circumcision, the father started to improve and was restored to health, came off of his deathbed. And Rabbi Shlomo Kluger explained to them that he didn't have enough merit to be saved by himself, but at the Brit, the Malach HaBrit, who is a term that we use for Eliyahu HaNavi, was present, and as long as he was already there, the guy had enough merit to be saved. That's the story. I don't know if it particularly rings true to you. I hesitate because it's not my usual style of Torah that I share in the framework of Torah Tidbits Audio. But, as I said, it's a very, very early pre-Torah Tidbits Torah Tidbit. And I like it. Something about it appeals to me, and that's the story. Having mentioned towards the beginning that God showed us the way to the mitzvah of and the chesed of Bikur Cholim, visiting the sick, and the story that I just mentioned about someone being healed from a serious condition, I'd like to play a clip from an album called Hashkifa by Baruch Levine. This clip takes the sentence in Avinu Malkeinu, Shlach Refua Shlema L'Chole Yamecha, and speaks of Refuat HaNefesh, Refuat HaGuf, a healing of the spirit and a healing of the body as well, and have a listen, and while you're listening, have in mind people for whom you would like to pray. Prayer for the sick is an integral part of the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, and it's done in the presence of the Chole sometimes, and most often it is done in our own private prayer. So listen to it as a song, but think of it and feel it as a tefillah, and have someone specifically in mind.
Can you know choy le'amecha.
Would recognize the music that started either the first half or the second half, so I'll tell you, and I'll trust you when you say, I knew that one, or I didn't, whatever. The first half started with a theme music from a movie or a TV series, I'm not sure which, called The Visitors, in reference to the celestial visitors that Avraham received in the beginning of Parshat Vayera. The movies and the shows about the visitors usually referred to extraterrestrial, meaning whatever that means, but it certainly can be applied to angels. The music that started this half comes from a show called Journey to the Center of the Earth. And I thought that that's very appropriate to the end of the Parsha, the Akedat Yitzchak portion, where God says to Avraham, Lech Lecha, again he says it, the first time it was come from your birthplace and go to the land which I will show you, and now Avraham's experience in the land includes his being told again, Lech Lecha, this time to a mountaintop known as Har HaMoriah, which according to our tradition is the Temple Mount, which is, in a different sense, the center of the earth. Not the core, but the center of the earth from which the entire world was created. So, if you know that show, you don't know that show, it doesn't matter. That's the music. And let's now talk a little bit about Akedat Yitzchak. There's no doubt that it is definitely the binding of Isaac is the most dramatic passage in the Torah. And it made its way into daily prayer, not in every Siddur and every Nusach of Davening, but There it is, after the morning blessings, before you get into Korbanot, and the connection and the transition from Akedat Yitzchak is to a personal commitment and a personal willingness to sacrifice oneself. And then you talk about the Korbanot that were offered in the Beit HaMikdash. So it's definitely a very special thing. It's a main theme of Rosh Hashanah, and it's a main theme of Slichot, and it gives us for Rosh Hashanah the ram's horn, which is a reminder of Akedat Yitzchak, and the Torah reading of Rosh Hashanah. It's certainly something that that is very prominent and very dramatic, and also quite unique. It should be noted that no one ever, after Avraham Avinu, can be tested in that very same way, because we know that child sacrifice is an abomination to God, because that's in the Torah. And it could be argued that perhaps at the very formative stage of personal discovery of belief in one God, that it was not an assumed given, because from a very technical point of view, we cannot, do not, will not accept any changes to the laws of the Torah. Yes, Avraham was before the Torah, and he was even before. But we can't accept that idea. So if God were to say through a heavenly voice or a prophet or in some other way tell us to do something which is against the Torah and violates the Torah, especially when it involves idolatrous practices, then we're being tested. And we don't listen, we don't answer, doesn't matter how serious it sounds, and how, you know, whatever. But Avraham Avinu was told to take Yitzchak and offer him as an Olah on Har HaMoriah. Tremendous differences of opinions as to what exactly happened there. But the bottom line is, God announces that Avraham has passed this tremendous test of faith, and the implication is that there won't be any others, although some people who count the 10 tests of Avraham do count the burial of Sarah as another one, but we'll leave that out. What I wanted to spend a couple of minutes on is a Rashbam, one of the commentaries of Torah, which, when I first learned that Rashbam a number of years ago, as the expression goes, it blew me away, because it was a different approach from anything that I had heard before. Vayhi achar hadvarim ha'ela, and it came to pass after these things. Rashbam says whenever the Torah uses that phrase, after these things, you have to look after what things? And the immediate topic before the Akedah was Avraham swearing to seed, C-E-D-E, property, part of a claim in Eretz Yisrael to Avimelech, the king of the Plishtim. And they made a covenant between them, which was not just between them, but for their progeny to follow. Lenini ulenechdi. Says the Rashbam, God said to Avraham, you dealt away part of the land which I gave you, and I said this land is for you and for your offspring. You gave that away? Take that son for whom you made this deal, and offer him as a sacrifice on Har HaMoriah, and we'll see what happens to your deal. God, according to the Rashbam, was actually punishing, in addition to testing Avraham, and did not like what had happened right before. I'll tell you right now, I'm over time again, but I'm going to go back and take off some of the song that I put in to finish with this point. Our leaders in Israel must know that this land is our land, that God gave it to the Jewish people, to Abraham, through Yitzchak, not Ishmael, through Yaakov, not Esav, nobody else. This land belongs to the Jewish people, and we have to behave accordingly. And we cannot, and may not, and must not give up any of this land because God gave it to us. I'll leave it at that for now, with wishes for Shabbat Shalom. There's more to talk about. L'hishtamea.